You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. It has long been a goal of modern medicine to figure out a way to stop malaria. Malaria occurs mostly in poor tropical and subtropical parts of the world. It's carried by a mosquito bite. It causes death, but it can cause substantial long-term suffering and incapacitation, along with huge cost to treat. Research is happening right here in San Antonio to fight malaria at the Texas Biomedical Research Institute. And joining us to help us understand this complicated research, what's happening here, is Ian Cheesman. He is a PhD, and he is leading this project. Ian, welcome to The Source.
Thank you very much.
So why is malaria the big problem that it's been for all these generations? What has been the big holdup?
The reason that we can't manage to eliminate malaria.
Yeah, why is it so complicated? We know mosquitoes carry it. We know that there's a parasite but why isn't that enough? What more do we need to know?
Well, this is a very large problem. The scope of it is fairly enormous, and we have made some inroads in eliminating malaria in certain locations. For instance,
like
San Antonio. We had malaria in San Antonio up until the 1950s, but the scale of that problem was much, much smaller than, for instance, throughout Africa, where we see about 90% of the cases. And the control strategies that were used to eliminate malaria in San Antonio, things like attacking mosquito breeding sites.
Vector control, indeed.
And case management, actively finding people who have malaria and treating them, are the same ones that we use to try and control malaria globally. But the scale of things is just very, very different. And the level of funding and sustained funding in these control programs is a much, much greater problem.
So when you go into these developing countries, undeveloped countries, and they have a malaria problem, how big of an issue of a tax is that on the population?
So globally, malaria kills something in the order of 700,000 people a year, which, to put that in context, that's about the same as the number of people who die from road traffic accidents globally. And on top of that, there is hundreds of millions of infections. So this is a major disease in developing countries globally. And quite sadly, this seems to target the most vulnerable people in a community as well. This seems to target very young children or pregnant women predominantly.
And so we know that there is a parasite that attacks the human system. Is it just people, or does it also attack other mammals?
Well, actually, it's the parasites which infect humans are part of a much, much larger group of parasites which infect everything from lizards to birds to rodents. Almost anything which has blood, you can more or less find a malaria parasite in it.
So you're looking at the genome of this parasite, and why is that important?
So the genome to the parasite holds a lot of secrets for us. It tells us, for instance, if we're interested in things like whether or not drugs are failing. Drug resistance is generally due to resistance mutation.
And that's a problem. We're seeing this rise of a drug-resistant malaria now.
We are currently seeing that, and we've seen that historically happen as well. And one of the major projects that we're working on is looking at the emergence of novel drug resistance in places like Southeast Asia, where historically we've seen things like chloroquine resistance or sulfadoxin pyrimethamine resistance, two other drugs that were widely used to treat malaria and no longer are used because of widespread resistance. We're now seeing the emergence of a novel strain of drug-resistant parasites in Southeast Asia, which is yet to emerge in Africa, where it would be catastrophic for malaria control and treatment.
So it used to be that quinine was used to try to treat malaria. Did that work?
Quinine is still used widely. It's now used more as a backup treatment than as a frontline treatment.
And that's what they make tonic out of for your gin and tonic, right?
Which is, they do, but sad news for most people is that there's not enough quinine in tonic. to prevent malaria. So I wouldn't use that as a control strategy.
Or an excuse to drink more gin and tonics.
I don't think we need an excuse. Yeah.
but so back to the science here. You're looking at the, and as you'll break down the genome, you're decoding the genome of the parasite, and it's telling us what?
So it tells us, aside from things like drug resistance genes,
yeah,
it tells us...
We're seeing like where the commonality of where the of this parasite with other parasites is, where some of vulnerabilities could lie, or what else?
Certainly. I think by scanning through the genome, one of the things that we've been able to find is particular pathways, particular sets of genes which work together, which are unique to the parasite, which are very, very good targets for developing new drugs to replace the ones that we have, which are starting to crumble.
I mean, it would seem that something that has been so pervasive, it is out there and attacking so many different species, that there would be some natural evolution would have provided some sort of resistance or some vulnerability, something that would attack this parasite. Does it have any natural enemies? Other than sickle cell anemia, you know?
Well, there are traits such as things like sickle cell, which provide some level of protection against malaria infection. But what we're continually finding when we look in the natural world is that there are compounds generated by, for instance, plants that have long been used as herbal remedies, which have some potent anti-malarial use. Some of the major drugs that we have, you've already mentioned quinine, and the major frontline drug that we have, artemisinin, both originally came from herbal remedies. And one of the programs that we're doing in the Infectious Disease Laboratory is screening Texan plants to see if they have any anti-malarial activity. And that's starting to yield some success as well.
Well, tell us more about that.
So that's a project that's led by my boss, Tim Anderson, and Charlene Nair, and I think also Susan Mebry at University of Texas Health Science Center. And they've screened thousands of different extracts from plants to see if we can put these in cultures of this parasite, which we grow in the laboratory, and see if it kills those. And that's a very first stage in order to weed out the potential compounds which we might be able to take forward for potential replacement therapies for the current drugs that we have.
So we're just in sort of a trial and error mode right now?
That is currently the mode of this project, yes.
Okay, but still going down into you're looking at the genetics of this parasite. And
yes.
And so how does that work? I mean, are you run it through the DNA sequencer and you take a look at it and go, wow, that's weird.
So actually one of the things that we've been doing recently is trying to look in greater detail at the parasite genome. When we generally look at the genomes of parasites, we go to a clinic somewhere.
So it's a parasite. It's a single cell.
That's right.
Organism.
Yes.
Okay.
So this is a single cell organism which lives within red blood cells. So what we can do is we can take the blood of an infected patient, we can make DNA from that blood, and then we can put it on these high throughput sequences. And one of the real challenges that we've had is that you put it on these sequences and you find thousands and thousands of mutations. But one of the real difficulties we have is that there isn't just one single parasite genotype or strain.
Wouldn't that be
with
nice?
An infection.
It would be nice.
It would be wonderful.
but apparently the universe is more complicated than that.
Absolutely. So when we start looking at that, we see this soup of different mutations from different parasites, and we don't know which mutations go with which parasites. And we need to know that in order to find out which mutations are driving things like disease severity, or drug resistance, or numerous other clinical traits.
And so, and what's the progress on that? I mean, that sounds like a mountain to climb, so much data to process. I mean, why are you doing that here in San Antonio? Why is that the location for trying to crack this puzzle?
Well, one of the reasons is we have fantastic resources here in San Antonio, both at the Health Science Center and at Texas Biomedical Research Institute. We're able to take parasites from clinics in Western Thailand where we work, thaw those out in the lab here, take them across to the flow cytometry center and work with Dr. Ben Daniels and Carla Garina and sort individual parasites into tubes. And by doing this, instead of looking at this whole complex mixture of loads of different strains of parasites at once, we can start looking at parasites one by one and work out which mutations go with which parasite and which parasite is causing more severe disease or is involved in drug resistance, for instance.
So we mentioned earlier about how San Antonio, one time, 100 years ago, that there was malaria here, 150 years ago. Now they were able to break that cycle with by being vector control and getting rid of mosquitoes and things like that. Why can't, that seems like a very simple solution. Why not just do more of that in some of these places where malaria is so bad?
So some of the reasons are, as I mentioned earlier, the scale of the problem is much, 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 much larger. There are hundreds of millions of infections versus thousands of infections. The level of funding is often not there.
But there's like mosquito nets. Mosquito nets, how much?
So mosquito nets are one of the most effective intervention strategies that's been put out there. And they're a wonderful resource, but they aren't the sole solution to the problem. We also need sustained vector control strategies. We need better case detection strategies. And one of the problems that we have in places like Africa is that because people have been infected with malaria so many times, a lot of people don't show symptoms. So there's lots of reservoirs for infection kind of wandering around there to reinfect other people.
So are we putting the moonshot effort behind cracking malaria that we should? I mean, because it's one of the things that's holding back big parts of the planet from reaching their potential.
That's absolutely right. And one of the important things that's been changing over the last few years is more and more research funding is being put into malaria research. And this has been driven by people like the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And that in turn has put pressure on things like the US government to put more funding in, which has been fantastic.
All right. Ian Cheeseman, he is a PhD. He's the scientist. He's leading a project at the Texas Biomedical Research Institute trying to find a way to beat malaria. This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. David Martin Davies is executive producer and host. Paul Flav is the show's producer. Management and oversight comes from VP of Programming Wayne Coble. Chris Udaly is the TPR web editor. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.